Now we're going to have Richard Gibbs, who's going to speak to us about skills for reinsurance. Richard, after graduating from the University in Canterbury in New Zealand, he worked in the US and then the UK in casualty reinsurance. In 2009, he returned to Australia as a casualty treaty underwriter for Munich Re Australia and joined Tokio Millennium Re in February 2012, where he is currently the Vice President Senior Underwriter of something. Casualty? Everything.
Well, thank you everyone for having me to come and speak. We're coming at it from a reinsurance point of view, so completely other end of the scale. We take volatility on our balance sheet and the nitty-gritties are really left to the insurance companies. Just a quick disclaimer here, these are obviously my opinions, not those of the company, so if I say anything bad, that's the end of it. The rest of me. Really we're going to look at themes here, five themes to consider in a skill set for reinsurance. We have to have a global mindset now. We can't just rely on the Australian market. We're looking at the analytical or numerical basis. We're looking at a legal overview of the entire structures and human negotiation and interaction. And of course, overlaying all of that is really just common sense. Dark art of reinsurance. So traditionally, it's been a mystical place for many. Deals done on the back of the napkin type of stuff. Early days saw limits agreed, capacity offered, but no slips produced. So, where are we now in 2015? We've got a comprehensive understanding of risk and very complex pricing models. We have a high emphasis on geographic aggregates deployed throughout the group and the region, and really understanding the portfolio diversifications. We use DFA modelling to come up with these, and cost of capital is included in all our pricing models as a metric really for reinsurers to adjust pricing and to work out profitability. And of course we have a strong focus on the regulatory impact of reinsurance now. Regulatory environment that we operate in really, one could argue, is at the extreme end compared to historical emphasis. APRA oversight is very much more attentive to the type of coverages in place these days, as shown in GPS 116, and we really have to satisfy effectiveness and application of aggregate coverage as well as the 1 in 200 year events. APRA oversight, potentially especially on the second balance due date, the losses in line need to really reflect the counterparty credit that we're operating in with our reinsurers and insurers, and overall a greater transparency of understanding the role of reinsurance exists now. If we talk about context in Australia, we really sit in a global environment. We talk about global reinsurance and changing events. We talk about the global marketplace and jurisdiction trends. And really we talk about where does capital ultimately come from. If we look at the global changing events, I borrowed this slide from Aon Benfield, that's probably been done to death, but really if we focus on 2011, it was a huge year for Asia Pacific in terms of loss activity. It really put us on the map for the wrong reasons. There was huge economic losses, especially through Thailand and some of the Asian countries, hugely uninsured really. But those that were insured were very largely reinsured. It's not the case necessarily in the US or Europe. So if we look at the bottom sections there, Asia or Oceania never really featured until suddenly we were 60% of global losses in 2011. The effect of this really, again, was in relative terms. We could be challenged on specifics, but really who's going to do that? As an index graphic, it doesn't really tell us what the adequate level is. So whilst the top chart shows risk-adjusted pricing of 150% in 2003, who knows where 2003 really sat in the big scheme of things. The recent graphic is more interesting, however, in 2009 and just before the earthquakes. Significant increases post-quakes have been unwound in the current environment. And really in 2014, we can see that in 2015, that reinsurance pricing, I would argue, is now down to pre-New Zealand quake levels. Big reductions, but perhaps still margin from reinsurers. Must be, surely you don't write loss-making business. And then one more, although this is 12 months old, this slide, it's interesting to look at the trend, and it certainly continues. And the others that are presented today have touched on this. Where does the reinsurance supply and capacity come from? It's interesting. In 2008, following the GFC, there was a drop in capital. Huge ability for the industry to rebound in 2009. 2011, there was huge losses and therefore a drop in capital again. But we did see, interestingly enough, pricing increasing. Strong underwriting years in 12 and 13 has been shown in some of the other graphics. And really a growing involvement at this point of alternative capital looking for a home. ILS markets, collateralized deals, and the hedge fund and pension fund businesses. The ability for the industry to recapitalize after a major loss is more than adequate. It was noted in this year, 2015 S&P report recently, the alternative capital as at 30th of June had reached $66 billion, so $1 billion more than what Warren mentioned this morning. So if that's the case, it's growing fairly quickly. But only really $24 billion of that is invested in outstanding cat bonds. So that means for traditional reinsurers, we do face a difficult environment. But really the keys for us are looking at expense management. It's the key to success in the modern world. Circa 25-30% of the pie for insurance expenses, so it's not an insignificant amount. Other factors to profit are really the cat claims burden in any given year and reserve releases that we also use. These can be significant contributors to our annual results. We can leverage expertise, and this is really where we probably differentiate ourselves from the ILS markets. We look at the wordings. ILS markets typically don't like reinstatements, they like one shot. So really, hand in hand with an ILS partner, the reinsurer can work in conjunction. And then of course, if we look at the right hand side of the slide here, what really is going to change the industry from our perspective? We're looking at a $100 billion or greater insured cat event in the US, or anywhere really, or a double trigger, which is probably the more interesting one, where we look at a $70 billion event plus, let's say, a 300 basis point increase in the US risk-free bond rate. This will attract investment away from our sector. So moving on from the global environment, we're looking at the second pier or theme, which is the analytical or numerical foundations. This shows a complex reinsurance excess of loss program. Now, the numbers are all fictitious, but if one was to look on the ASX, you could probably find a very similar example to this. The point of this slide really is to look at where reinsurers tend to play on these programs. It's very broad. They all have different appetites depending on their risks. And really, when you're looking at the formation of a reinsurance program, you're going to start with your ACRC calculations and your horizontal or delta ledger covers. We're looking at the 1 in 200 vertical year losses, and we're looking at the 4 1 in 6s and 3 1 in 10s. We're also looking at your risk appetite statement. Different reinsurers will look at this program in different ways. Some with different reinsurance financial strength ratings can be seen at different parts of the program. Really, we're looking at where the appetite of that reinsurer plays and how you can fit the program together. The brokers have a very complicated job of managing all these, and often they need a budget to meet. Before I go to the next slide, just a brief note, we on the pricing side, we use really, for cat modelling specifically, we use third-party vendor models. We use RMS, AIR and EquiCat and blend them. Some just use one or some just use two. We use exposure modelling and experience modelling with all our pricing. And of course, the most difficult is the non-model perils, or the bushfire as an example. The third pillar or theme really is what's overlaying this. This is the contract. There's a combination of many different things. Lloyd's or London market wordings, in-house general counsel or retained legal opinions, the accepted reinsurance wordings or protocols, and of course the inclusions of sanction clauses, limitations, and jurisdiction clauses. The purpose really of this slide is to highlight an understanding what's covered On what basis? Excess of loss reinsurance can often have a different application to that of underlying coverage. Make sure we understand any potential differences in cover here. It's interesting, as wordings and coverages change, however, and local legislation changes, we have to consider the reserving assumptions around these. If we think about tort reform in 2002 and 3, and the change of legislation such as New South Wales lifetime care and support, this really changes what our respective views are. Some complexities certainly are around where we look at global treaties covering multiple jurisdictions, and how we account for the rates of exchange on those, whether they're paid or booked, and how we look at those on our balance sheet. Legal jurisdictions also cloud our judgment and cloud the outcome of some of these claims, especially when you're looking at multiple jurisdictions around the world with different jurisdictions for insurance and reinsurance policies. The fourth pillar, rather, and probably the most interesting one, is human interaction and negotiation. If we look at Australia, it's definitely an intermediated market. There's heavy reliance on brokers from reinsurance and insurers, and as the cog really between the insurance company and the reinsurance and capital markets. Certainly anecdotal evidence in Australia here of 95% of reinsurance business transacted through an intermediary. Brokers provide all companies access to property cat vendor modelling. They use all three, RMS, AIR and EquiCat, and really have a different view to that of reinsurers. And this means that invariably there's negotiation required between reinsurers, insurers and brokers. Everyone has a different view, everyone has a different use of loadings. It's fair to say though that we need a sustainable balance, otherwise market failure or volatility of the cycle will continue to be perpetuated. And of course the last one is common sense. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. We have to look at what real risk transfer is and make sure we're complying with that. Knowing what our knowledge limitations are, where the models let us down, and really, does a lack of data mean a lack of exposure? I'd argue not. We need a high acceptance of standard deviations around a mean uncertainty. Often it can be said any analytical analysis is the average of a lot of forward-looking assumptions. So reinsurance really here is to respond to volatility. Currently one of the biggest concerns we've got is obviously on the low investment yield landscape. This makes a big difference and obviously causes some reinsurers to look at their investment portfolios and perhaps run slightly more risk on that side as opposed to the underwriting side. And of course Warren spoke about some emerging risks with insurers and reinsurers previously. And the question is really, how do we offer coverage for this? If we want to continue in this marketplace, we need to ultimately find a price and cover these losses. We want to promote innovation in Australia and New Zealand, so how do we remain a profitable enterprise and therefore a fine balancing act between the two? And lastly, really just to understand the underwriting dilemma as one has explained it to me. Imagine an analogy for insurance and reinsurance. To explain really how this all fits together. We're all sitting in a car with all the windows blacked out, except for one, the rear window. In the front, there's the underwriter with their foot on the accelerator pedal, driving blind as fast or as slow as the market can imagine. Next to them is the claims manager with his hand holding onto the handbrake for dear life, trepidation of a loss, crash in the road or a bump. They only have so much suspension and reserve. And sitting in the back seat, there's the actuary, shouting instructions to the underwriter. Which way to go? Where do we go? How fast? Based on what they can see out of the back window of the past. So, as you can see, this picture really does sort of sum up our industry. We need to find a way where we can open those windows and slightly try and broaden our vision and really use the actuaries and use our knowledge of big data to look at what potentially is coming forwards. We don't really want to build a driverless car like this. It's not going to be very effective on the roads, but it will sustain natural catastrophes. So with that, thank you.